episode of the Rebel Radio Podcast, and live and in-house and sitting next to me, and don't touch my leg, Matt. That's weird.
Oh, sorry.
And, I'm going to start the show by announcing that we will be back at Compalooza this
year. Boom, baby. You heard it here.
We knew it was a foregone conclusion, but we got the official announcement that we are welcome back at Compalooza, and it's Memorial Day weekend. I kind of know we're recording, but I'm not allowed to officially announce that yet because the schedule could change. But we are going to likely be doing an Indiana Jones type panel for our show this year. I don't think that's going to change, but I just say likely just in case for some reason we decide to, oh, we want to do something else. But,
yeah, like Howard the Duck, you know.
That probably won't happen.
Yeah.
But it will be Memorial Day weekend at the George R. Brown Convention Center, and come out and see us when we do our live podcast, and come out and see Carl Urban and guys
Jack
from the boys,
Quaid.
The cast of Arrow, which are they still relevant?
Shatner.
I don't know. William Shatner, dude. Shatner's there.
Vampire Diary dudes, if you're looking for a reason to drag your chick says, you can't go, well, hey, come with me. Those guys from the CW that you drooled over all the time are there. Now you have a reason, to entice your woman to go with you.
That's a good point. And lots of things to buy and see and artwork and things to do at Compalooza. It is a multicultural, fandom convention that's been
Krillin, the voice of Krillin's going to be there
for a long time.
Yeah,
and so it'll be good shit, man, for sure. At Cometpalooza 2023, and man, it'll be like our sixth year, I think, being there.
Oh,
so
yeah,
we've done some shows there. We back when the show was a different format, and we did a couple shows like that, and just having fun talking stuff. We've covered Big Trouble in Little China there. We did the 20th anniversary of the Phantom Menace from the show floor. We talked the life and legacy of Arnold Schwarzenegger a couple years ago.
Yeah.
Last year we did
a
look back at Batman Returns.
Yeah.
And so we've done some fun panels, and we usually have a good time and hanging out with some friends and good people there. And so Compalooza 2023 in a couple months. And hopefully we see you there. Come out and see us, man.
Yeah, come out, buy some stuff.
Get a button or a sticker from us when you see us.
Yeah.
And, it'll have a good time, which reminds me, I have to find this. You know, I moved in October, and it's like,
Where is everything?
What did I do with the Compalooza swag?
I
have to find it.
Yeah, man. Everything gets lost in translation.
But I will find it. I will find it.
Yeah, like Liam Neeson. Activate your inner Liam Neeson.
Sorry. Well, I was thinking more... when I would say, I will find you, I was thinking more Daniel Day-Lewis, Last Mohican,
Oh, okay.
No matter what, I will find you, man.
I thought you were like, I will find you,
kill you. One of the greatest scenes in that movie.
Yes.
Under the waterfall. But, man, it's been a week. A lot has happened this week in life and pop culture. And so lots to talk about today. And I think it's going to be a good, fun show as we inch closer to episode 350. And that being said, I hope people realize that you might get a lot of Indiana Jones from us between Compalooza, episode 350, which will be Last Crusade, and we're considering doing Dial of Destiny as a full show, too, when it comes out. So you're going to get, if you like Indiana Jones, you're going to get your fix on the Rebel Radio Podcast, and we like Indiana Jones.
Yeah, we like Jones, dude.
I mean, honestly, it's probably my...
Dr. Jones.
It's probably my second favorite franchise of all time next to Star Wars. I mean, I love Indiana Jones, and we're going to talk about the new trailer here in just a little bit.
Well, you sure it's not the Fast movies?
No, it's not even close.
They're the Lord of the Rings echelon of movies.
Dude, they showed that trailer in front of the Mario Brothers movie, and I was just like, I'm just shaking my head at it now. I mean, there's cars, like, I don't know.
I think they should just go full-on ridiculous with it and have them, like, time travel to fight the dinosaurs.
There's some rumors of a car in space or some shit in this one. I don't know.
Oh my god, that would be.
It's like
I almost want to see that. Just
I can
to
just
see
Ludacris jumping from space and go, "Yeah, we family in space.
In space."
There's a funny TikTok video going around about how they can't pitch the idea, and this guy's like, "We're gonna smash cars. We're gonna drop over space." And then we're going to CGI Paul Walker and it's all going to be about family. That's it. Family right there.
Family, baby. And then all of a sudden, Vin Diesel has a mom. And for some reason, Aquaman is trying to take out Vin Diesel now.
Oh, that's the thing in the trailer. You can tell Jason Momoa did this for a paycheck. Even in the trailer, he's absolutely hamming it up.
Oh, definitely.
He's just like, you know what? Just pay me some money.
Yeah.
You know?
This is definitely a Michael Ironside Highlander 2, a Colin Farrell Daredevil from last week. You name it. It's a hammy performance.
But speaking of, though, man, I did take the kids and saw the Super Mario Brothers movie. And, okay, let me put this into some perspective from an adult for the first 15 minutes of the movie.
Yeah.
The first 15 minutes of the movie, I'm holding on going, oh my God, what is going on? It's like an anxiety attack. They're plumbers. They're trying to fix something. Things are breaking. And I'm I'm not going to say I had a panic attack. I don't want to sound that bad, but as an adult, I'm like...
You're thinking of the adult stuff.
What the frack is going on? So I had to suddenly jumpstart my mind and put it into kid mode, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And then once I did that, I enjoyed it. It's so fast-paced. It's definitely one of those kid movies that does not lose the kids' attention.
No,
it does not. But once I got into it and put myself in that right mode, I had a lot of fun with it. The kids loved it. It's funny. It's adorable. It's adventure. It's got everything for a perfect kids movie. And if I had to pick an ass clown of the week, our little funny new segment we sort of unintentionally started last week, it's all the idiots who complained about Chris Pratt. It was fine. It's just a voice. Okay? It doesn't matter. You know, just because the internet exists doesn't mean you need to voice your opinion about every stupid little thing that's out there.
Exactly.
But that said, though, Jack Black was great. He said he found his inner Darth Vader to be Bowser, and you could sense it, you know?
Yeah.
For sure. Charlie Day was good as Luigi. Although, I thought all the voice acting was fine. I had a lot of fun with the movie. If you've been playing Mario games for 40 years, like a lot of us have, you'll catch... people said, you know, you might have read on the internet, there's lots of Easter eggs. When you're thinking Easter eggs, you're thinking, like, it's Mario Easter eggs, straight up. I didn't really catch anything that was non-Mario, but there's nods of pretty much every game that's ever existed in the Mario universe.
And every show.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, one-season show that I used to like growing up, and I thought it was awesome to go back to it.
Yeah, that was towards the beginning of the movie. I remember that.
Yep.
And so that said, it's a heck of a lot of fun. It's got sequel written all over it because it's making a shit ton of money.
Hell yeah.
No
one can touch it.
And Jack Black is the movie's biggest fan. He's been out there all week pushing for Pedro Pascal to be Wario in a sequel.
Yes.
And he says, you know, Bowser can come back. We can base the game on Bowser's revenge. And Jack Black's just playing it up. It's great, man.
Dude, yes.
And it was fun. It was definitely worth the wait. Cause, you know, this movie was supposed to be out back about a year ago, and it got pushed back to, like, November and Thanksgiving. Then they pushed it back again 6 months to April release. So it's been a long time coming, and well worth the wait. You know, Nintendo's very tight with their license, you know, and Nintendo was very particular about who did a Mario Brothers movie, and they felt that Universal and Illumination Entertainment would do it justice, and they certainly did.
Definitely. They did a really good job. They knocked it out of the park, and they have you wanting more.
Yeah. No, it was fun. You know, if you're hesitant, and there's not been a lot of family fare at the theaters since in the COVID world over the last couple of years. A lot of stuff is either going direct to, you know, streaming release. There's been a few things like Minions and a couple of Disney movies, but this is a big one, man. It's worth going to see.
Yeah, the biggest one.
And it's only an hour and a half long, so it moves quick. But definitely fun. As a longtime Mario fan, just enjoyed all the little things in it that they showed. And it was cool. So
definitely. Can't wait for a sequel, man.
Yeah. Probably be a couple years away, but, you know, we'll get one, I'm sure. You know, they're not going to sit here. I mean, the thing's already made $500 million worldwide, a couple hundred million domestically. I mean, they're going to do a sequel.
Yeah.
They just see green in their pockets. And it's funny because last week, John Leguizamo was our ask-on of the week, and for mocking this movie and saying there's no representation. I still, like, dude, it's just a movie. It's an animated movie. And, you know, and at the end, it was about family.
Exactly.
I mean, Mario and Luigi, you know?
That's right.
And but we'll talk about Leguizamo here in today's feature film, which, strangely, he might be the best part of the feature film we're watching today. But we'll get to that.
I challenge you on that one. We'll get to it.
We'll get to that in a little bit.
I saw a not-as-good movie that I thought was going to be better than it was. It was, you know, touted from the Rider is of A Quiet Place, obviously. Very good, tense, thriller, horror movie. And I'm a big fan of Adam Driver. I'm a fan. And I was interested in seeing another action sci-fi thriller type of movie starring him. And so I went ahead and just bought it because me and the wife wanted to see the movie. And so I did the theater at home thing because that saved me about $10. And you know, it was okay. It's not.
Well, you're talking about 65, right?
65.
You didn't say the movie name.
Yeah, so 65.
And which account did you buy it on?
On my Vudu. Yeah, it's on my Vudu account.
Oh, okay, because I want to watch it.
You watch it. It's. I would say.
I think I need you to send me your sign in because it does. Well, it might still be in my PS4.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I'd say it's like a C+.
I've heard it's kind of a fun action thrill movie.
There's a lot of walking. I feel like Randall from Clerks 2 is like, you know, imminent in my mind kind of watching this movie. Walking and more walking.
Yeah, you like my return joke I sent you yesterday.
And it made me think about that. So there's a lot of walking in this film. And one thing about this film that really... you know, they kind of miss the boat. I want you to watch it, so I won't spoil it. But because they spoiled this, probably the biggest part is that there's 65 million years in Earth's past in the prehistoric.
See, I didn't know that because I don't think I really saw.
It says it in the trailer.
Oh, see, I don't think I ever saw a full trailer. I just saw advertisement.
Yeah,
for it. I was like, oh, I kind of want to see that.
The first teaser trailer that came out didn't tell you much. You see a flash of a T-Rex.
The picture is fucking spoiling, man.
And, yeah. but it misses the boat to have this this Planet of the Apes style reveal, you know? Damn you all to hell! You know, I don't know if Adam Driver would sound good saying that, but, you know, I would love to see it. But it's still fun to watch. You know, I would say it's worth a rental. So if it comes down to $5, $6... definitely worth it. Hopefully Peacock or Paramount Plus.
I think it's a Paramount movie. Yeah.
It may have it in another month or so.
Yeah, it'll probably show up there in 45 days.
So check it out if you want to see Adam Driver. It's cool seeing him, you know, in a futuristic movie again, like Star Wars. I like his acting. He's a good actor. And I feel like he brings it in this film fairly well.
There's been rumors circulating that now, Michael Mann is not even confirmed as even doing this, because Michael Mann is not even say he's ever going to direct another film, because he is getting older, but there's been rumors circulating that Adam Driver would play a young De Niro in the Heat sequel. Which is which the book Heat 2, which was partially written by Mann, apparently is like a prequel when De Niro's character became a bank robber. But I don't take much precedence of rumor because it just kind of...
you just never
know. They wrote the Heat book sequel as just kind of fun. They're never even worded there's going to be a sequel. I also feel like it's a movie that you don't need to do another one. It's like, you know, leave Heat alone.
Leave the legacy alone.
But
intact.
Other than seeing Mario, I did this week, amazingly as busy as I was, I found time to... I finished the entire first season of The Bad Batch.
Nice.
Which I know we're going to talk Mandalorian in a minute, but I am... The Bad Batch is a show that, I guess when it came out, I watched the first two episodes and, like, I couldn't... Mm-hmm. I couldn't focus. I was like, I don't know if I really like this. It's post-Clone Wars. I wasn't feeling it, man, but I highly recommend it. Give it a chance. As you get into it, it's some of the best-written Filoni animated stuff he's done. It's really good, because it deals with the aftermath of Order 66 and how some of these clone troopers that... were able to get rid of their inhibitor chips and still be good guys, and they're dealing with what they did, and they're dealing with their service to the Empire that they realize now is terrible, and trying to turn their life around by almost becoming not really mercenaries but like mercenaries because they're trying to survive. And it's really well done, and there's ties to Rebels in this. We see a young Hera. There's ties to the clone program. There's ties to how stormtroopers come about from no more clones. So much Star Wars lore in it. And I'm looking forward to getting to the second season, too. It's a show, like I said, at first I just couldn't get into it. I normally don't have much problem getting into anything Star Wars, man, but The Bad Batch, it's good, man. It's Rebels level, I think. It's up there with that. And don't get me wrong, it's got a couple episodes. It's only 16 episodes in the first season. Just a couple episodes that are lackluster, but that's every show. Not every episode's going to hit.
I've seen the first season, yeah. But I guess I need to, there's only one season out right now,
right? Two seasons. The second season just finished.
Okay.
A couple weeks
ago. So I need to check that out.
So you've watched the first season, too.
Yeah.
So I didn't spoil anything for you then. So you feel the same way I did, like the way it ties into Star Wars lore and like these soldiers finding their place in a new world, basically.
Yeah.
You know?
I like how they explain that they don't have the chip
right.
that the other clones had. Mm-hmm. And that explains why they were kind of immune and why... You know, to be turned, they had to take one of them
right.
and basically reflash their mind.
Right. Then just not only that, sometimes Star Wars is just science fiction, but I feel, it is science fiction, but I feel like it comes across in The Bad Batch, like the ideas of dealing with PTSD after war and these soldiers finding their way, especially the character Crosshair.
Oh, yes.
I mean, just what he has to deal with and finding his place and what's right and what's wrong. Because he's been told to follow these orders his whole life, and then he has to figure out who he is, you know, why he's doing this. And then Omega, who comes across at first as just almost an annoying kid character, and she grows on you to the point where when she's in peril towards the season finale, you care.
Yeah.
You know, and Filoni does a great job conveying that, and that you don't want anything to happen to her. And so it's good stuff, man. I appreciate what Filoni's done with Mandalorian, but I really think his best work still lies in animation. The guy is just a master at that craft and what he does with it.
I would put his animation on par with what DC does animation-wise.
Yeah.
It's really good. It's entertaining to watch, even for adults.
And as we know, Filoni's a huge Godzilla fan, and there's no shortage of big monsters in The Bad Batch. He likes to throw his big monsters into things.
Oh, yeah.
So that said, this week's episode of Mandalorian, the second to last episode of season 3, titled The Spies. And it's a good one. Probably the best episode of the season, I would think, so far.
Yes.
As Bo-Katan brings the other tribe back to Navarro and attempts to unite them, which they're united to an extent. They're united by name and by the fact that she learns has a Darksaber. Maybe not united in the fact
and the bloodline.
That, yeah, and the bloodline. Maybe not united in the fact that they all like each other, but they decide to take a trek to Mandalore to see if to show them that it is inhabitable and that it's safe to go back. So, several people volunteer when they head there, including the armorer, and Grogu gets a really cool rebuild of IG-12. But
yes.
He can sit in and ride and say yes or no, which is one of the funniest moments
hilarious.
Of the show ever. I was really laughing at that. That was hilarious. God, Disney marketing, you're so smart. because now you can sell toys where Grogu sits in the robot. It's fucking brilliant. You know?
New ways to sell the same thing.
And, Jesus, man. I mean, Jon Favreau and Filoni, when they created this, they had to think, we're going to make $1 billion,
or
you know? And it's just really funny. And so they go to Mandalore, and... they run into some other rogue Mandalorians while they're there that turn out to be friendlies.
Mm-hmm.
And they join them too and tell them they can take them to the capital city.
They ask them if they're Death Watch.
Right. But they say Death Watch has long been gone.
Yes.
And they end up taking them to the capital city where they discover that the Great Forge fires are all are gone. And there's some background talk about, is it Kostari? Is that his name? That he used to live there and he remembers it, a few of the different characters.
Yeah.
And remembers when the cities were great and all that before the Purge. And essentially, to make a long story short in this episode, as they trek through the halls of the capital city and everything, they...
it's a trap!
They run into a trap, basically. early in the episode, we discover very... Let me go back a little bit. We discover very early on that Moff Gideon...
Where's Admiral Ackbar when you meet him?
That Moff Gideon is still alive, which we already knew.
Yeah.
And it's revealed early in the episode that he meets with a Shadow Council of Imperials, including General Hux's father,
mm-hmm.
and including General Thrawn's right-hand man from the Thrawn novels, which was a Easter egg they threw in there for people, which the Thrawn novels are continuity. I'm not talking the Heir to the Empire ones. I'm talking Aftermath and the stuff that was written a few years ago.
Yes, that they plan on really building on, coming up, and we'll get into that, I guess.
As Gideon asked for some things from the council that he needs to continue building the new empire, which my theory is it's all leading to the First Order eventually.
Oh, yes.
And so we don't understand why he asked for these Praetorian guards, but he does, and we find out later on why. Am I saying that right? Praetorian guards?
Praetorian? Yeah. The Red Ninja Dudes.
Yeah. So as we move forward, they walk into a trap as they see these troopers approaching that look like Mandalorians. They're like, oh, those aren't Mandalorians. And there are some sort of troopers that are flying with jetpacks and wearing Mandalorian-type armor. And they attack the Mandalorians and to the extent that they trap them. And then what I thought, as much as you hate to say it because it's the bad guy, it's a pretty big reveal when we see Moff Gideon show up wearing full Mandalorian armor.
Yes.
And he looked pretty badass.
He did, say. Man.
As he walks in there and he's... Man, Giancarlo Esposito is so good.
He's a good bad guy,
I mean,
man.
You need to watch Breaking Bad, Matt. He's so good in it.
I've seen clips of him working at that place.
I'm telling you, if you want a good show to watch, man, that Mando's almost over. Watch Breaking Bad. You won't go wrong. Because it's only like 60 episodes, dude. You can do Breaking Bad. I mean,
okay.
And he's just so good. And it reveals that he had these new dark troopers created using Mando armor, and he basically captures Din Djarin, and as he pulls him away, the Mandalorians find a way to get the blast doors back open and start fighting off the
a la episode one Qui-Gon Jinn.
Right. And then they start Paz gets loose and he starts fighting off the clone troopers that attack it.
A la Terminator 2.
Right, and he kicks some ass, right?
Oh, yeah.
And just when we think he's going to survive, as Djarin walks off with Moff Gideon and the other Mandos get out through the back door, the Praetorian guards show up and they kill Paz Vizsla in quite elite style. And people were saying, oh, now I saw some internet chatter. Oh, now the Praetorian guards do something badass. Well, they were badass in Last Jedi as well.
They really were.
But the difference is... Jedi are still the most elite warriors in the universe.
Yes.
And that's why Rey and Kylo were able to beat them, which possibly puts Praetorians just above Mandos, or maybe equal to them, but it was four on one?
Yeah.
To be fair?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think it was 3-on-1.
Was it 3-on-1?
And he was doing good at first. He knocked one of them down,
right.
And it was like 2-on-1, and then they kind of got him in a compromising position. The other guy came back, and it's like...
I like how it was shot, too, where they... Where they kind of almost moved in like a slow motion style, the Praetorians. They were just calm, cool, and collective, like samurai warriors.
Very precise movements. Their strikes weren't wasted. It wasn't like stormtroopers just firing randomly off the whim until they hit something. They were skilled. You could tell that they were skilled fighters.
And so the episode ended on a dark note, basically, as a Din is captured, and we still don't know who the spy was. It was interesting the episode was titled that, because we don't know who it is, and now the theories have begun. Who's the spy? Is it the armorer? There's people that think maybe it's Din all this time, which I doubt it, but that would be one hell of a loop if the title of the show character is the bad guy.
Yeah.
To Costa Reeves as possibly being... the daughter of Moff Gideon. That's one theory.
Mm-hmm.
And she's not seen during the final fight, which she also apparently disappeared during the season 2 finale. So there's all kinds of theories out there. But I have a feeling that the season finale, that this season's going to end a little dark.
Oh, yeah. There have been people that have seen a pre-screening of this, and they've said basically it's the best episode of The Mandalorian they've ever seen, ever, out of all the seasons.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And that's a high remark, seeing as we had freaking Luke Skywalker at the end of season 2.
And we had, and apparently the finale is going to clock in about 40 minutes, is what I'm hearing. So it'll all come down to Wednesday, man, and what happens as season three ends. And, you know, there's people thinking, oh, Ahsoka's going to show up and save the day. I don't think so. Not this season.
No.
She's off doing her own thing, trying to find Thrawn, you know? And so we'll see what happens, man. Do you think the way the show's headed that they would kill Dijin?
Man,
I mean...
I would be pissed if they did.
You know, I doubt it. I think Bo... As a lead character, I think Bo-Katan's more likely to die.
Yeah.
Which would, I think it would make for an interesting story, because that means Din would have to unite the Mandalorians, which is a job he really doesn't want.
Yeah.
But it could make for an interesting story to be told. I also think that the, as a storyteller and a moneymaker, that Disney's smarter than that. They're not going to kill the main character of a show that people like. Yeah. I just don't think that's going to happen.
Not Pedro.
No. And So we'll see, man, what happens whenever it all comes to a fold this week and or this coming week on the season finale of The Mandalorian Season 3.
Yeah. Yeah, man. We'll see what happens.
And we're gonna stick with Star Wars and just dig right into the Star Wars news before we get to the feature film. So we know that we are going to get a Mandalorian movie. And Star Wars Celebration happened last weekend. And so we got a lot of Star Wars news, and they came out and confirmed that all these Mando Universe shows, Ahsoka and Boba Fett and everything, are all going to tie together to a big Mandalorian movie event, which Favreau and Filoni had hinted at this a couple years ago.
Yeah.
So it's not a huge surprise. And Dave Filoni is going to direct the film, which we don't know when it's coming out. They haven't said yet or anything, but a lot of people believe a couple years away, you know, that we're going to get at least one more season of Mandalorian, which is curiously interesting that they haven't confirmed a season four yet, but I think it will happen, you know, obviously. And
yes,
what I have a feeling is they're going to announce that season four will be the last season, then it's going to fold in the movie. That's what I expect at this point.
That's probably, you know.
So we're going to get a Mandalorian movie. We are also going to get a new Rey movie set 15 years after the Rise of Skywalker called Star Wars New Jedi Order. This is expected to be out in 2027, I read, but some people believe it'll come sooner. As James Mangold, who directed Indiana Jones and Dial of Destiny and Logan, is going to direct this. And I think that's good news, because I really like most of Mangold's work. And he's already deep into writing it. So I think this movie might be a little further along. 4 years away seems a long time to have this released.
Yeah,
you know?
Probably more like three.
Variety's the one that reported that was going to be 2027. But I just don't think... I think, you know, Kathleen Kinney already hinted at that the next Star Wars movie would be in theaters in 2025. So I have a feeling that the Rey movie could be 2025, unless the Mandalorian movie comes out first. So we'll see. I think that's cool. It's going to deal with Rey and the rebuilding of the Jedi Order and the struggles to keep it together. There's forces that be to try to prevent it.
Yeah.
You know, I know some people groan, more sequel characters, but you know,
it's got to carry on somehow.
It's the new universe. Rey was fine. I didn't really have very many issues with her as a character. I didn't really have a lot of issues with sequels at all. I don't knock the sequels too much, like a lot of people. They just are what they are. They exist.
Exactly.
It's more Star Wars stories to tell, and to me, that's pretty cool, you know?
I think the sequels will turn out to be how the prequels were.
Mm-hmm.
We'll judge it at first. Overall, I feel like there's a you know, big part of the fan base that's going to judge it, like just like they judge the prequels. And then they're going to find the bright spots that they like to hold on to, and that's the parts that they're going to hold on to.
I agree completely. I think it'll be fine. And then the third Star Wars movie they announced is going to take place 25,000 years before A New Hope. And it's going to tell the beginnings of the Force and the first Jedi. And not a lot's known about this movie yet. They did announce the director, which I did not write down. But interesting. I have a feeling this is one of those things. I haven't heard a lot of internet complaining about this, but I'm sure people out there are like, oh, we don't need to know beginnings of the Force. But it could be cool if done right.
I saw a rumor that it was possibly going to be an origin story, somewhat telling the beginnings of Darth Bane. And if that's what we get, if we get like KOTOR, basically, I think that's badass.
Yeah.
Because they already acknowledged that Revan is part of the Star Wars universe.
Right. And they're not afraid to go back to these Legends characters, as we've seen with Thrawn.
Yes.
And other characters. So I think Disney at first was not sure what to do with the Legends character, but they realized the popularity of it. And And people say, oh, Disney doesn't listen to fans. They do to an extent.
Yes.
You know, I think that they know what's going on, and I think that's why we're seeing them go this direction with things. So it'll be cool. And on top of all that, we got our first look at the Ahsoka show that's coming in August. We got a trailer for it, and man, it was cool as shit.
Hell I mean, yeah.
We get to see, looks like, new Dark Jedi users in there with these orange lava-looking lightsabers, which were freaking badass.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that was Ray Stevenson playing the bearded.
Really?
Sith. I don't know if he's a Sith or Dark Jedi. Of course, Ray Stevenson is probably best known for the HBO Rome TV show.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, he Very played bloody. Punisher and Punisher Warzone
mm-hmm.
and the Punisher sequel. So, you know, I think he's going to make an interesting bad guy named Baylan. We got our first look at a live-action Sabine. And the biggest cry, people say, oh, she has long hair. It's okay for her to grow her hair out.
Yeah.
I thought she looked cool.
People will complain about everything.
Yeah, we get a first look at Hera being played by Mary Elizabeth Winstead. And I thought overall it just looked like a really great Star Wars series.
It does. It looks good. I'm excited for it. And, you know, it's going to bridge another gap in the Star Wars timeline and lead us into A New Hope.
We got a brief glimpse of the back of Thrawn's head.
Yes.
Too, you know, which is going to be played by, was it Ben
Mikkelsen,
which is Mads Mikkelsen's brother.
Yes.
He did the voice of Thrawn in Rebels, so another live-action character like Katie Sackhoff bringing her character to life, and we're getting the same now with Mads. And, you know, some people say, well, how come, what's his name, Taylor did not play Ezra because he's older? Well, he doesn't really look like Ezra.
No, he does not.
You know, not that Mikkelsen really looks a lot like Thrawn, but I think he can pull it off, you know,
yes.
with his looks, you know, with makeup and stuff. But and I have heard some complaints about that already. Oh, he doesn't look like Thrawn from the anime series. Well, some characters just aren't going to look exactly the same.
Yeah.
You know, Katie Sackhoff doesn't look exactly like Bo did in the show, but she pulls it off with the hair and everything. So,
yeah.
You know, it's fine. So I'm looking forward to Ahsoka, man. I think it looks awesome. And I wish it wasn't August because it feels like a long way away to wait. There was also a leaked trailer for The Acolyte, which hit. Which, from what I saw from the leaked version, it kind of looked like a Star Wars Summarize, almost, from what I saw.
Yeah.
And this is another show that's like, it's during the High Republic era, I guess a few hundred years before Phantom Menace and the sequels. And I think it's coming out early next year. I don't think it's this year. I think it's coming out next year.
Yeah, next year.
And it looked interesting. I was a little surprised we didn't get any skeleton crew footage, since it's already done filming.
Yeah.
And it's the Jude Law-led Star Wars show. We also got an announcement that we just talked about the Bad Batch earlier, that it's going to come back for one more season. It'll be the final season of the show. So that's good news, as they'll get a conclusion to their story. And along with all that Star Wars news, we got a new trailer for Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny at Star Wars Celebration. And I was already sold on this movie. I'm sold even more. It looks like they definitely fixed the horse CGI, which people complained about in the first trailer. It looked
yes.
a lot better in this trailer. It looks like it's got all the classic indie jokes in it, and just adventure, excitement, everything you expect from an Indiana Jones film. I can't wait for June 30th, man.
And I like they brought back the best bad guys from the Indiana Jones movies, the freaking Nazis.
The Nazis, yeah. You know, so it's all going to be tied together, and it looks like James Mangold and his crew and Steven Spielberg, even though he didn't direct it, is a producer on it. And it looks like they're going to send Indiana Jones out in good fashion with a good final movie. And we'll know in a few weeks when it plays at Cannes Film Festival. I think May 14th it premieres or somewhere around there. And we'll find out our first word on how the film is. And, you know, I think half of my gut feeling tells me this is this year's Top Gun. A nostalgic thing that everyone loved Top Gun. And I think Dial of Destiny is going to be great. And people are going to go out in droves to see this film.
Yes.
I have a good feeling.
I think that's a good prediction.
We're going to stick with Disney before we do a little bit of DC news. And we got our first look at the Marvels this week. Coming out in November. It's this Captain Marvel sequel, which also has... what was her name? Rambo in it?
I
can't think of her first name.
Monica Rambeau.
Monica Rambeau and the girl from the Miss Marvel TV show, as they all joined together. You know, the trailer didn't do a lot for me. I was just like, oh, it's not a Marvel movie.
Yeah.
You know,
it looks kind of, you know, just generic.
Yeah.
And a lot of people took to YouTube to dislike the trailer and thieves and hordes.
I'll probably go see Guardians on the big screen, but I'm waiting for Ant-Man and Wasp to hit Disney Plus. I think it's hitting at the end of the month or something. And right now I have a feeling I might do the same for the Marvels. I'm like, I'll just wait for this one.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know? I already have my Guardians of the Galaxy tickets.
And my thing is, too, like, they pushed the cat thing, too, which was a funny gag at the end of the first Captain Marvel movie. But it's like, that's all it was a funny gag. And the trailer kind of, like, really pushed the cat thing for the Marvels. And I was like, yeah, we'll see. Just wasn't super excited about that. And now if I can read my handwriting. We did get our first look at, we're going to switch gears to DC.
Mm-hmm.
They put out a production trailer of the Penguin this week.
Oh, yeah.
As we got our first look at some footage from behind the scenes of the Penguin shooting. And people were comparing it to the Penguin meets the Sopranos.
Yeah.
Which I'm not really surprised by that. I mean, it's going to be a dark crime tale.
Yeah.
We get these 8 episodes with Colin Farrell's a Penguin. Maybe. And, you know, that universe, the new universe that Matt Reeves created with his Batman movie, I'm fine with it. I want to see more in that universe. I wish I didn't have to wait almost 2 more years for his, over 2 years for his next movie.
Yeah.
But the Penguin will tie me over until then. And then lastly, we got an announcement that the next Flash trailer will be on April 25th. And I just hope they don't show a lot. I think the first trailer was enough. I don't need more.
Yeah.
I mean,
what more? You know, I guess you can throw like a few more things out there, but it feels like there's all you need to know.
There's a lot of bloggers and DC people that have already seen this movie because they were allowed to see it it was at CineCon this past weekend. It showed, I think it was this past, or it's coming up this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
But they've shown it to bloggers and stuff because a lot of it was part of their trying to market it towards, you know, and go around the Ezra Miller controversy. And 100% across the board, everyone that's seen this movie has said how good it is. And I haven't seen anything negative about people that have seen it. So, I mean, Tom Cruise saw it and he loved it. You know?
Yeah.
So, I just think that be careful with this trailer, DC. Let's not spoil the movie.
Yeah.
You know?
Don't give away too much. I hate when they do that.
Right. So, we'll see as we get closer to the next Flash trailer on April 25th, which is just, what's today, 15th? So, 10 days away. To the next trailer. All right, well, let's get into today's featured film then. And we got pop culture this month, pop culture coming up towards the end of the show, but right now let's get into today's featured film that you've been waiting for with bated breath if you're listening.
Yes.
As we continue comic book movies that just didn't quite work, and we covered Daredevil last week and talked about the things that worked in it and the things that didn't. And this week we're covering 1997's adaptation of Tom McFarlane's comic book Spawn. Before I get into this movie, the first thing I want to say is, the movie we're doing next week, the actor that was in it apologizes quite often for being in the movie.
Yes.
I honestly hate that. One thing I like about McFarlane, he's never apologized for this movie. Ever.
No.
It exists. McFarlane had it made. He does realize, he has said, like, you know, it could have been better. But he doesn't apologize for it. And I love that. Just let it be.
Yeah.
You know, you made it. So what? This was made in a time where comic book movies were done differently. Spawn feels very much like a mix of 80s and 90s action films. It's not great, but I don't think it's terrible. It does have terrible acting in it. The special effects are, to me, I don't think they're great all the time. They're good sometimes, but I think this movie...
Not to be confused with the costumes. Costumes are great.
Yeah.
You have the makeup people from Walking Dead and Evil Dead on this thing, and it shows.
Right.
But those special effects kind of...
They're very ambitious.
...make it lost in translation.
I think they're very ambitious for 1997. And the crazy thing is, you think 4 years later, we have Lord of the Rings and movies like that that started doing even bigger special effects. And that just shows... What my point is, because Spawn is not even close to Lord of the Rings, but...
No.
That's how fast tech was moving at this time.
Yes.
The technology was just... In the mid-90s, late-90s, it was booming, the CGI boom. And it all started going back to 89 with The Abyss, with the CGI water. And then Terminator 2 with the CGI Terminator. And then in Jurassic Park. Special effects in the 90s, people don't realize, were just moving quickly. And Spawn is very ambitious for what it tries to do, I think. It's fair enough to say. And I think That's it fair. Gets a little bit of break for that reason, because it tries really hard to do something that hadn't been done. And what I say is, like, full CGI worlds. The whole world of hell is all CGI.
Yes.
And it doesn't work as well as it should.
No.
But it's fine, I think, too. Watching it this week, I hadn't watched it in years. And I probably saw this movie two or three times back when it came out. I was a big Spawn fan. It's remarkable how much I remembered of it, because it is briskly paced. It's only 95 minutes, so it moves fast. It doesn't lose your attention. And it's hard to describe this movie because Spawn is almost an unadaptable comic book.
Yeah.
And McFarlane has talked about that recently, as like how to bring it to the big screen in a reboot.
Because it's like the whole premise didn't really make sense whenever you thought about it. Because, it's like you've got...
We can give it a quick summary.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you've got this great character. Like, on paper, you've got Al Simmons. He's this Marine that works for the government, does righteous killing so that he can go back home, kiss his daughter and his wife.
We didn't have a daughter yet.
No, didn't have the daughter yet. Go home to his wife and his dog, Spaz. Martin Sheen is really set to groom him.
And he's hamming it up in this movie. Yeah. Sheen is just like, let's have some fun.
For real, he's got pictures of explosions on his wall. He's promising Al Simmons that he will make this his last bout, this last mission, because Al Simmons wants to get out of being a contract killer, basically. But Martin Sheen, you can't trust Martin Sheen. I don't know why he's trusting him. He's got tarantulas crawling around his office, pictures of explosions on his wall.
It's like it all says he's got, bad guy.
Yes, he's got scorpions in a bowl. I mean, I think Skeletor, who lives in a skull, is like, hey, man, tone it down, dude. Tone it down. But, Al agrees to go on one more mission. And, of course, he gets double-crossed. They sets him on fire. And Tom Cruise is not there to put out the flames. No. And he dies. Wakes up 5 years later in an alleyway, looking like a fucking piece of salami.
Well, Waverly was watching with me, and she goes, Dad, he looks like bacon.
Bacon, yes.
Yes.
He is referred to as Bacon Bits, I think, at one point in the movie by Leguizamo's character. And, of course, we get Krusty the clown that shows up with him. And
played by John Leguizamo.
John Leguizamo.
Who's actually pretty good in this movie.
He actually does a good job. The cheerleader scene is a little disturbing.
Yes.
And I feel like they spent too much time focusing on it. But the devil makes a deal with Simmons, as in the comic book, that if he leads his army, he will give him one more day to see his wife. The devil, who looks like a piece of cat poop that is crafted into a devil with turtle penis ears and Ron Weasley's pubes as hair.
And meanwhile, while Simmons is dead, his best friend moves in on his wife, knocks that shit up, and has a baby with her.
Are we watching Talladega Nights? Is this John C. Reilly moving in on
What are the odds, too, that in 3 weeks we did two movies with D.B. Sweeney in them?
Oh my God, yeah.
It's like, what are the odds?
What are the odds?
Because the guy doesn't like act in everything.
And then you've got Nicole Williamson, who, in my opinion, is the best part of this movie. His voice.
Oh
my God.
Cagliostro.
Cagliostro. And just because of his voice, this guy could narrate Beavis and Butthead, and it would sound great. I think give him anything to talk about. It's going to be awesome. So you've got him. He's following Simmons.
He's like the guide for Spawn. Yeah.
He's the Yoda. And of course he's referred to as Yoda.
He even calls him Yoda.
And Simmons, starts, becomes Spawn. He tries to bust in on a party a la Batman.
Yes. From Batman.
Yeah. And starts, trying to assassinate the man, that set him up. But is learned that, this is just what the devil wants him to do.
Right.
And so I guess to unleash the apocalypse, the Violator, played by John Leguizamo, wants him to install this heart monitor in so that he can blow up the whole world if he dies. But what doctor would reasonably install this thing on somebody? I don't get it.
Right. I know, right?
And we get led into this little training montage with Caglioso, and he just destroys like one bottle. It's weird. He does one thing to hone his powers. It's like if Luke lifted one rock and Yoda says,
okay, you're good.
Or if the Karate Kid just did wax on and then he's like, all right, now go out there and beat some ass. It's a rest training montage. I feel like we needed a longer one. There's a director's cut of this, which I don't think a longer training
montage. It's just a couple of jokes and words. Yeah, it really doesn't change much. A couple of bad words.
And so, zoom forward. Martin Sheen is trying to rile up Spawn at the end so he can keep his end of the bargain, which is said a ton of time by the Dr. Claw-sounding devil, who looks like Sauron's pet chihuahua. And
I'm trying to remember. I think I read somewhere that they tried to hire a famous voice for that, but it didn't work out.
Really?
Yeah, and then it ended up being some generic voice.
Yeah, it's what's weird. What throws me off about it, not only does it look rough, but his mouth doesn't even move with his words. I'm like, what? The devil's probably my biggest nitpick of this movie, obviously. But Simmons is able to hone himself down and removes the detonator, and he destroys the violator, all the spawns in hell, and saves the day. And says, you know, hey, buddy, you know, keep on banging my ex-wife.
Right. The parts that work in this movie are not Michael J. White's acting, because he's probably the worst actor in the movie, even though Sheen hams it up. But at least you buy into Sheen's hamming it up. You know he's doing it on purpose. Where Michael J. White just looks like he's stoned and not into it the whole time.
Yeah.
His suit is awesome. I think they do a good job making Spawn look
cool. Better than Topher Grace in a black suit.
Yeah, the special effects come across good. The Violator, I think between Leguizamo's clown version and when he turns the Violator, I think that's all well done.
Yes.
I think the story, it's simplified from the movie and it's fast paced, but it's not hard to follow. You know, it's pretty easy. I think it has some decent action sequences in it, especially in the real world, maybe not the hell world, because that, like you said, that part's a little bizarre. Spawn has to learn how to use his powers, and it's in the comic books, it's much more explained. When he runs out of powers, he could die.
Yes.
Cagliostro kind of throws that at him in the movie, then it's not even really talked about again. It's just like, okay, don't use all your powers. You know?
He's like, he's already dead. Yeah. You know? How can he, is there a hell for hell? You know?
The movie does a well cinematography-wise.
Yes.
I think it's shot. There's some really good shots in this movie that are pulled from the comics, whether Spawn standing up on the building or the alleyway or the crosses, and the religious symbolism in the movie comes across like it does in the comics. It feels like Mark AZDP, who directed this and hasn't directed a whole lot since, watched The Crow a whole bunch and tried to emulate that in some ways. With his set design and things.
I can see that.
In fact, it's scored by Graham Revel, who did the score for The Crow.
Alleyway looks like like a Crow movie.
Mm-hmm. So those are some of the good things about the movie. Am I missing anything?
No. You've got some devil worshippers that show up in the movie.
And really serve no purpose.
Yeah, no purpose. One of the guys looks like Guy Fieri. I don't know if it actually is Guy Fieri. But I was like, is that the Food Network guy?
Well, Todd McFarlane himself cameos in the movie during the Violator fight in the alleyway, too.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I guess I missed him.
So we got in the good parts of the movie. Some of the bad parts of this movie is some of the special effects are very cringe. Some of them are great, and some of them are like, no.
Yeah.
That just looks worse than television.
The cape, you can see the binary code in the cape,
right.
I feel like.
Well, they wanted to try something new with the cape, and they wanted, like, we're going to see CGI do something that's never been seen in a comic movie, which, to that extent, it's successful.
Yeah.
But to this point, it's not successful, is it looks CGI. But then the suit, whenever he puts his mask on or his chains come out, all that looks really good. So it's like, and the Violator fight looks really good. So they spent money on certain scenes, and other scenes they, like, oh, we're going to be cheaper.
Yeah.
And use our 1997 Chromebooks.
97 Chromebooks.
The acting in this movie is not the best. It's hammed up across the board. The girl who is created for the movie, who plays Jessica Priest, she, like Martin Sheen, looks like she's trying to have fun in the movie, but God, she's terrible.
Yes.
It was originally supposed to be like in the comic books where he fights Overtkill, which is an assassin that Wynn has built. But to save money, they couldn't build a cyborg for the movie. So let's create a female character with big boobs that just gets killed because she's stupid.
And when she does get killed, the coroner walks over to her and they're talking about her. They're like, one guy's like, oh, this one got shot in the head. And he looks over and goes, oh, she's dead, and walks away. I'm like, what? There's no like, oh, no, this is how horrible. Or, you know, dear Lord, you know, the carnage. There's no... He just casually like, oh, I need to get some ribs. It's time for lunch. Oh, yeah, she's dead. Yeah.
Yeah, then in the party scene, we have a chick with red hair walks across the room with spawn earrings on, which is supposed to be Angela from the comics.
Okay.
That would have set up a sequel if it ever happened, but it never did, probably, thankfully.
And then when Williamson's wife is backing out of the driveway in the beginning of the film, the air freshener on her vehicle has the clown face. Does Hell have a marketing department
right?
that sells fucking car accessories?
And he gives Cyan, the little girl, a clown doll.
Yes.
Which she creepily carries around throughout the movie.
Very weird.
It's like, what? Yeah. And the parents didn't think that was a little strange?
Yeah. I figured he'd get tossed right after that, but she holds on to it whenever she runs into her father, who is now going by Spawn, you know, at her mom's work convention.
And then it's also one of those movies that has, like, a double ending. When you think that Spawn has defeated Malbolgia and Violator and the movie's over, oh, wait, Violator shows back up one more time.
Yes.
In the house there at the end. And it's one of those movies where the house gets destroyed and there's no, like, okay, we're just going to destroy this house for no reason, you know. Which always bothers me sometimes in movies. Like, you're destroying the house. Don't do that.
Yeah,
why can't you go outside and fight?
Go outside. Like in Spider-Verse, when Aunt May's like, take it outside.
Yes.
House is getting destroyed.
You know, Spawn, I think, for what the time it came out, I think it's watchable. It's not as good as Daredevil.
Correct.
It's probably out of these four comic movies we're doing it. It's probably the worst, I would say. But yet at the same time, it has like this kind of charm to it. It's kind of a dark charm. It's kind of fun to watch if you're on a lazy afternoon.
Well, Tim Burton was set to direct it at first, and I think that probably would have given it a closer look to a better film. Maybe
it would have been a little... It probably would not have been as quickly paced and action-packed. Burton would have probably maybe bogged it down a little bit more with Al's depression and dealing with his what he's coming into in this world.
Yeah, for sure.
But thing though about Burton is though too. Remember after Batman Returns success, he was offered a lot of comic movies and he turned down a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
The only one he got serious about at one time was of course Superman Lives, and that ended up falling apart too.
Yeah.
Thank God we did not get Nicolas Cage balding as Superman.
Yeah.
I love me some Cage, but no, he's not Clark Kent.
Yeah, man.
But yeah, you know, and McFarlane fought for this movie to be made with the success of Image Comics, and he was proud to get it made, as a lot of Image Comics were being optioned for films at the time, and really none of them got made until this one. And I'm to this day, I'm trying to think what other Image Comics finally got made into movies. I mean, over the years. I know he also had the animated series done for HBO shortly after this, which is really good.
So one or two seasons?
It's three seasons.
Three seasons.
And the anime series is really well done. You know, it's very adult compared to this. They did talk about turning the Spawn film into a darker R-rated film at one point, but the New Line Cinema felt that, you know, R-rated comics still weren't a thing. Yeah, there was some success with The Crow, but as far as in the theaters, you know, there wasn't a lot of R-rated films, so they wanted to keep it PG-13.
No, Wanted, is Wanted a Image
Wanted's
comic?
Wanted's based on a comic. Yeah, it is an Image comic.
Tank Girl...
But Tank Girl's Dark Horse Comics.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Was Witchblade Image Comics?
Witchblade was Image. But that was a TV show.
It was a TV show.
Yeah.
That's right.
So, I'm trying to think, as far as film, I can only remember is Spawn. I'm sure it's something I'm not thinking of, but, you know. But Spawn, though, I think is, you know, it has its place in comic history as being one of the first biggest selling comics of all time to get turned into a movie. And they tried their best to make it a relatively okay film, and the movie was relatively successful at the box office, if I remember correctly.
It made double its budget worldwide, so it made something.
Right, and if I remember right, too, it was pretty successful in DVD, I think, because it was one of the first comic movies to have a big DVD release, and it was one of the early Blu-ray releases, so I think it had some success there, too.
Yeah.
So, you know, not all is lost, and again, I think I appreciate the fact that McFarlane's never apologized for this film. It is what it is. And that's one thing McFarlane has always been, is a great artist, but also a straight businessman. You don't look back, you keep looking forward. He's been very successful with toy companies and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not going to go apologize for something. I mean, he's made some toys that weren't successful, but did he apologize for them? No. Learn from your mistakes and keep going.
That's right.
But Spawn, it was frustrating because it was been on HBO Max, and we went to record this week, and it went off HBO Max. So we ended up renting it to watch it, and... you know, which is okay, no big deal. But normally this movie's on HBO Max.
Yeah, but, normally.
I mean, it had been on there forever, and all of a sudden they took it off. But good stuff, man. I mean, it was fun watching Spawn. I actually kind of enjoyed rewatching it, and you know, and you know, I don't hate it. Like I said, it's okay.
It was my first time watching it all the way through. Yeah. Because I never got to see it when it first came out. I was 11, so you know, I wasn't able to see it. But I did see it come on, you know, the random, you know, cable movie channels. Yeah. And I would catch bits and pieces of it. I remember him on the motorcycle. I remember him busting through the ceiling, shooting guns. And that's really all I kind of remember.
That is the one scene in the movie that it's kind of weird. Like when he's going on his way to his back to home to stop Wynn from hurting his family.
Yeah.
And the Violator just sort of randomly shows up to rile him up. It's like, it's almost like they wrote that scene like, we just need to make the movie a little longer, so we need an action scene here. And we got some explosions so we can blow some stuff up.
Yep.
The scene almost doesn't serve any purpose except to have a random action scene in the middle of the movie and throw some cool special effects with Spawn doing some cool shit and his caping in the fire and all that. You know?
Yes.
And on that extent, it works. But it's definitely a 80s, 90s action style film.
For sure.
I mean, so, you know, it sits on like a 5.2 in IMDb, so it's nothing spectacular.
No, but barely passable.
Yeah. So, you know, Spawn.
Spawn,
enough
man.
Said. All right, man, it's the middle of April. We always do this fun. We do pop culture this month in pop culture history once a month, where we talk about some things that have gone on in this month in the history of nerdism.
Yeah, so we try and include wrestling on here sometimes for you wrestling folks. And, of course, Sasha Banks was on this last week's episode of The Mandalorian.
Oh, yeah, man, our boy Brian, who's been on the show before with us, calls me out, you didn't call it Sasha's cameo. I'm like, but she's been on the show before.
Yeah.
In last week's Mandalorian. It's like, it's not a new cameo.
Yeah,
so take that,
cameo.
Brian.
Boom. Yeah, hit us up whenever Hulk Hogan shows up.
That's right.
Yeah. So, 1989, speaking of Hulk Hogan, WrestleMania. Hulk Hogan beats Randy Macho Man Savage in WWF heavyweight title.
Did he sock him with a Slim Jim?
He socked him with a Slim Jim. Hulk Hogan beats Macho Man Randy Savage, so he broke his Slim Jim, man.
Yeah.
Broke. Yeah, man, with his 23-inch biceps.
I don't know what to say beyond that.
Yeah.
Men breaking men Slim Jims.
I think that's the one where Macho Man Randy Savage said, Hulk Hogan's got the biggest biceps in the world, but mine aren't chopped liver.
Yeah.
1968, this month, Planet of the Apes, starring Charlton Heston and Roddy McDowall, premieres nationally in the United States, calling back to that big reveal that could have been a big reveal in 65. This is like the big reveal.
Still one of the greatest science fiction films of all time. One of the greatest reveals of a movie of all time. Greatest twist endings. One of my favorite science fiction franchises of all time.
Yes.
I mean, I love it. We've covered it early on when we rebooted the show. It's probably like episode 84, 85, back around there. We covered the second one. And we'll probably get around to covering some more of them eventually, I think. But definitely, man, all-time classic with the great Charlton Heston.
So, 1906, the first animated film debuted. It was called Humorous Phases of Funny Faces.
1906.
And I don't think anyone's ever... I don't know if anyone can really tell us about it.
Yeah, I think I've read somewhere that it was one of the great films that got lost.
Yeah, it looks like a bunch of chalk drawing.
Yeah.
And maybe they were just moving lines.
Probably so. I think it got lost in archives. You know, some of those early films did, but yeah.
2009, little more recent, Star Trek film rebooted by J.J. Abrams, starring Chris Pine, Zachary Quinto, premieres in Austin, Texas. You know, bringing forth a new generation of
did
people interested.
Did it premiere South by Southwest? It must have.
Yeah.
Good film. I mean, you know, I mean, no, we talk a lot of Star Wars here, too, but I do appreciate Star Trek.
The beginning of that film, man.
And it's arguably, you know, I like Star Wars Force Awakens, but man, Star Trek might be J.J. Abrams' best movie that he's made.
For real.
I mean, it's, you know, I appreciate Mission Impossible 3 and Super 8.
Yeah, Super 8.
But Star Trek might be the best movie he's made.
I think so, man. Just for that touching part at the beginning, summarizing.
The great ending, too, when Nimoy shows up and helps him out and all that. I mean, it's awesome, you know?
Yeah, he tying in the old and the new.
Yeah.
It's great. Great stuff from him. 2012, of course, the movie that may have changed comic book universes forever, The Avengers, directed by Joss Whedon, starred Robert Downey Jr., Chris Evans, Chris Hemsworth, Scarlett Johansson, Mark Ruffalo, and Chris Renner.
That was an April release?
Yep, April. So. All of them. Age of Ultron.
Well, I remember Endgame was towards the end of April.
And Infinity War. All the Avengers.
It just felt like they were always like May movies, but it's the start of summer season. But yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, April's slowly becoming the
movies are starting to move up some more. Yeah,
the kickoff to summer.
But that was an important end of the first few years of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Not an end, but the end of Phase One of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Yes. I guess you could say. And it was cool, man, seeing all those characters on screen for the first time. I'm still a little disappointed that there was no Avengers assembled in the first movie. I know it was worth it to wait for Evans to get around to saying it in Endgame, but it felt like when they are in New York and you see the camera circle around, it should have been said then.
Yes.
It would not have lost anything that came out of Endgame when he said it. It would have been awesome. But it felt like it should have been said in that first movie. And I know they said they didn't do it because they were saving it, but I think it still would have worked both times. That's my only miss for that first Avengers movie. I felt like there should have been Avengers assembled in that movie.
1971, Charles Manson sentenced to life in prison for the murder of Sharon Tate.
Interesting, because I was watching parts of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood again the other day. I was just thinking about, like, man, Margot Robbie's portrayal of Sharon Tate in it. And how good she is in that movie. And I know Tarantino changed history in that film and everything. That movie has like a real creepy vibe to it because you know what's going on in the background, even though we never see Charles Manson in the movie or anything like that.
Yeah.
Just weird, man, that, what a sicko. Did he pass finally in jail?
I thought he did.
I think he did.
I thought he did pass away in jail. And speaking of Charles Manson, I actually saw a movie the other day because someone told me to watch it, Strangers Pray at Night. And if you don't know, the Strangers movies...
Yes, he passed away in 2017.
Yeah, they're based off of like the Manson-style murders that happened in the 70s.
Oh, okay.
If you're interested, you can watch those films. It's a loose portrayal, obviously. Charles Manson.
Crazy thing is, too. Crazy. Well, the weirdest thing is, too, that there are people believe that if his followers had not gone after Sharon Tate, he may have never been caught.
Yep.
So people believe that. That once he went after someone that elite, that's what did him in. So that's crazy.
Lighter news. 2012, People Magazine named Eva Mendes as one of 2012's most beautiful at every age. And I don't think they're wrong. I think she could still hold that title.
I'd buy that for a dollar.
I'd
do her.
Yeah.
Well, she's out of spotlight now. She's chosen to raise her family and retire from acting. And she hasn't ruled out ever coming back. But for now, she did her interview pretty recently. I remember reading correctly. And she says, as of now, she's not coming back. She's taking care of her children.
Hey, some things are more fine, important, man. Okay. You know?
Yeah, I will never disrespect someone for that.
And lastly, another comic palooza great. 1993 action series Walker, Texas Ranger, starring Chuck Norris, debuts on CBS. We were in the same room with that man.
And we survived.
We survived.
We lived to tell the tale. The great Chuck Norris, who lives about an hour and a half from us out there in Navasota, and does his thing. In fact, he's a regular around town there. You know, people know him, and he's just treated like a regular. And, he's a legend.
I mean, he is.
Absolutely. One of the early internet legends with all the Chuck Norris facts and things like that.
Yes.
And, he apparently has a third chin that comes out of his beard.
Yes.
And his hands are licensed as Law and Order.
Law and Order.
So,
he had sex in a semi-truck, and the juice from that event got onto the floorboard. Now we call that semi-truck Optimus Prime.
I can't top that one, folks.
Can't top it.
On that note, good job, Matt, with this month in pop culture history.
Yes.
Let's preview next week's film as we continue on with our making noise back there.
Yes.
Let's continue on with our comic books movies that didn't work. Because we're going to look back at 2011's Green Lantern on next week's film.
The great light has gone out in the universe. Worlds annihilated. Lanterns, we face an unprecedented danger. An enemy powerful enough to destroy entire civilizations. To fight this enemy, the Ring chose a human. But I don't need to tell you your duty.
To a lantern that I got from a dying purple alien.
So, this is the chosen human.
The Ring turns thought into reality. Its limits are only what you can imagine.
A sword? How human.
Remember, your enemy is not gonna play fair.
Is that what I think it is?
An alien life form, Doctor. The first that mankind has ever encountered.
Son, we're gonna get you well again.
I've never felt better in my life.
They said they wouldn't have chosen me. They didn't see something I don't see yet.
I see. You had the ability to overcome fear.
Stay here.
No problem.
If you die, innocent lives will be lost. Your world will be annihilated.
Help me save my planet.
Fight it. Fight it with me. Brightest day, blackest night. No evil shall escape my sight. Let those who worship evil's might beware my power. Green Lantern, light!
You know, this movie I was really excited about when it came out, because at the time I was really hyped for Green Lantern. I was reading Jeff Johns' run of Green Lantern, which is amazingly fantastic. If you've never read Jeff Johns' run, it's worth reading. And I was fine with the casting. I was fine with Mark Strong playing Sinestro. Mark Campbell directing, who directed GoldenEye. This had everything working for it. Then the movie hits. And it's great for about an hour. And then all of a sudden, the last 40 minutes, we're like, wait, what just happened to this movie?
Yeah. It's like, they're like, okay, let's turn up the speed.
Yes.
How everything's happening. I bitched about the training montage in this week's film, but there's actually a lengthy training montage in this film next
week. It has some similar problems to Daredevil, where they maybe tried to cram too many comic issues into one movie.
Yeah.
This movie also, severe studio interference. Martin Campbell was the director. And we'll talk about it next week, where the studio wanted the movie out for summer. Martin Campbell went to the studio, said it's not going to be ready. We needed to push it back to fall. Warner Brothers wasn't having it. So basically, Martin Campbell never got to complete the film he wanted to complete. And we'll talk about all that on next week's show as we look back at Green Lantern, which is on HBO Max.
Yes.
And I own it anyway. Yes, I actually own a copy of Green Lantern. Just as a fan, I wanted to buy it back when it came out.
The movie that made Ryan Reynolds leave Skojo. For, crap, what's her name?
I don't know you're talking about. Chicken.
Yeah.
Blake Lively.
And, yeah.
Not that she's bad, but you don't leave Skojo.
Yeah, man. I feel like you're leaving an A for a B plus.
Yeah, it's she's still good, but it's still a downgrade.
Yeah.
Ryan, what were you thinking?
Dude.
So that's next week on the show, as we'll discuss Green Lantern. And remember the RebelRadioPodcast.com for all your Rebel Radio needs, and follow us on all podcast apps, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Apple's Podcast, and a few more, Amazon Music, and some I can't remember. Yeah. We're on a lot of them. Podchaser, and there's a few of them out there that we're on now. And but thank you, as always, for listening. We do appreciate it 110%. And again, we'll be at Compalooza. Hopefully, maybe we'll see someone there that listens to the show and actually really does listen to it. I have friends that listen to the show and stuff, but I would love to have some rando just say, hey man, I really like the show.
Yeah.
I've never really had that happen. And I would like, I don't know why, I would appreciate that if that would happen one day. I mean, it's cool, that our friends listen to the show, and we appreciate them too.
Yes.
But it would be nice one day at one of these events, say, man, I listen to you guys all the time. And I'd be like, oh, wow, you're like our number one fan, and I'm going to fanboy out on them. And all
Hell else. Yeah.
And hug them and make them all awkward. And but until next week, stay safe as always, and thank you again for listening. This has been Mark.
This has been Matt.
And remember, as always, just go there and do it.